Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
In the summer of 1980, an infant vanished from the tent of a family who was camping in Australia. While it was assumed that the baby was attacked by a wild animal, evidence started to build that there may have been more to the story. Did Azaria Chamberlain's mother play a role in her death? Is it true that a dingo took her baby? Grab your didgeridoo and your goon sack, because it's time for a Down Under episode of True Crime Cast.
This is True Crime Cast, and I'm Jamie here with John. Happy to be here. What's up, man?
Hey, man. It feels like, once again, it's been forever since we've been in the booth, so just happy to be here. A lot of really awesome things going on at True Crime Cast right now. Do you want to talk about any of it?
Yeah, we have some people to thank that have joined our Patreon family. We'd like to thank Kristen, Allison, and Elliot. Elliot came in at our highest level, and we're really excited about that. Thank you all so much. We hope you enjoy the bonus content. We actually had our July episode go up yesterday. So if you are a Patreon subscriber, then you heard that, where we got to talk about what we would eat if we had one last meal.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. The episode we're doing today was brought to you via a Patreon subscriber who paid $20 to get this episode.
Yep, this comes from Todd. So if you love this episode, feel free to give Todd a shout out. If you hate it, it's Todd's fault. Is that no, good?
Don't put that on Todd. Todd's great. So yeah, we appreciate it, Todd. We hope you enjoy the show. Hope we do it justice. Yeah, jump over on Patreon, check us out. We put a lot of awesome stuff up there, and I think yesterday's episode was a lot of fun to record. So I hope you enjoy hearing it. Jamie, we still have t-shirts for sale, but you know what? Let's talk about all that stuff at the end. Stick around to the end, because we do have a special announcement about the show and some other stuff that we're going to be doing. In the meantime, you have done the bulk of the research on this case from Australia, so why don't you get the ball rolling, my friend? I'm from Tennessee. I can't do
it. If you weren't offended by John, hopefully you weren't offended by Nate's intro, which I thought was fantastic. So yeah, Todd, we're so thankful that the people who have requested cases have done. He gave us a few to choose from, and this is one that's been brought up to us before. It's one of the most famous cases in Australian history, and it's based on a case we found out that most people in Australia are still kind of divided on. So it's kind of a mystery of what really happened. This is about the death of Azaria Chamberlain, who was just a little over 2 months old when she died. Now, it's the way that she died that's so controversial. Now, I want to get this out of the way. We named this episode A Dingo and a Baby. I have read online people being very adamant that the quote from Azaria's mother, Lindy, was, "A dingo ate my baby, a dingo took my baby, and a dingo got my baby." Apparently, people are very opinionated about what she actually said. I don't think it matters that much, but we're going to get into the story, so that's why we didn't name it after whatever quote you subscribe to. Like I said, Azaria's mother's name was Lindy. She was actually named Alice Lynn Chamberlain. She was born March 4th of 1948 in New Zealand. She grew up as a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and her family moved to Australia in 1969. And that's where she met an Adventist pastor named Michael Chamberlain, who she married in November of that same year. Michael was born on February 27th of 1944. He was also born in New Zealand, but settled in Australia. In addition to being a priest, he was also an author and a teacher. Michael and Lindy went on to have four children together. The oldest was Aiden, born in 1973, Reagan in 1976, Azaria, who our story is about, in 1980, and Kalia was born in 1982.
Yeah, man, the Chamberlains seemed to be the perfect family. They were committed to the Seventh-day Adventist faith, and they had lots of friends in their community. So the event that we're going to be talking about tonight took place on August 17th, 1980. The Chamberlain family went to a group camping trip to a little place called Uluru. This used to be a popular camping place and a place where people could go climbing. However, it's not really used for that anymore. It's not really allowed. Some of the climbs are just really dangerous, and much of the land belongs to the indigenous people there. So on this day, Michael and the bigger kids went on a climb, and the rest of the group stuck back and were doing some cooking at the campsite. Now, at some point before 8 p.m., Lindy took Azaria to lay down for the night in a little makeshift baby bed in their tent. She returned to the group and was sitting around socializing when she claims that she heard the baby cry out. So, of course, Lindy ran over to the pack and play, but Jamie, the baby was gone. Lindy panicked, of course. I mean, that's what any parent would do. And famously cried out, my God, the dingoes got my baby. And as Jamie mentioned, there's been some, I guess, controversy over what was actually said. But that's how the kind of the media portrayed it. Investigators came on the scene and immediately started looking for the child. There were several people in the party that had seen dingoes around the camp since they had been there.
Just in case there's any curiosity to our listeners, especially those not in Australia, a dingo is a medium-sized wild dog that's native to Australia. There have been other reports of dingoes attacking people, attacking smaller pets, and especially attacking children since Azaria's case kind of came and went. Investigators would later find a blood-stained jumper just outside the campsite. These were the clothes that Azaria had been wearing when she disappeared. However, some have questioned why the clothes were mostly intact if a dingo had viciously attacked the baby. There were just small tears on the jumper, and it looked like the baby had just been taken out as if by an adult. There would actually be testimony when this got to trial, John, from experts that would say that dingoes are capable of taking items out of wrapping paper without ripping the paper because they're so focused on their goal of what they're trying to get to that they don't rip apart or take the time to tear up whatever the container is. In early 1981, there was a coroner's inquest, which is basically a really deep investigation trying to determine the result or the cause of the death. And in 1981, this one determined that the baby had died as a result of a dingo attack, even though that they'd never found Azaria's body. And there's one major thing that was odd about this inquest. The report, which was televised when they kind of announced these are our findings, noticed that the body was likely taken from the dingo by an unknown person and then disposed of. So they don't have a body. They haven't seen the body. All they really have at this point, as far as evidence of whatever attack they think happened, is the bloody jumper. How in the world would they come up with the idea that a dingo killed the baby and then a person disposed of it? Can you have any insight on how that could happen? Because that seems like out of left field to me.
No, man, that makes no sense to me at all.
Prosecutors were not satisfied with that determination and continued investigating. They found a few things that were a bit suspect in their eyes. They took ultraviolet photographs of the jumpsuit, and it showed a few things, John. It showed a handprint that appeared to be on top of the blood, and it looked like a small adult's handprint. So they kind of thought that might have been Lindy's handprint. They also believed, based on the blood distribution on the jumper, that there was evidence that most of the blood had come from the area of the baby's throat. So that caused prosecutors to believe that the baby's throat had been cut. They also had an expert claim that there were minor tears that were found on the jumpsuit, and even those could not have come from the teeth of dingoes. So even if a dingo had attacked the baby and made the minor damage to the jumpsuit that had been made, that the marks didn't reflect that of a dingo. They also found evidence of blood in the car of the Chamberlain family, which was a Toronto hatchback, for anybody wondering what they drove. It said that the blood was found had fetal hemoglobin in it. Now, fetal hemoglobin hemoglobin is blood cells, right? So these are cells that babies have when they're born, but they're gone by the time a baby reaches 6 months old. Now, Azaria was just a few months old, so she still would have had these cells in her blood. So police believed that they had traces of fetal hemoglobin that they found in the car. Now, they also found similar traces of blood in the family's camera bag, which is even more odd. Like, You change a baby's diaper in the car, a baby gets a small cut in the car, you're taking care of it. Like, there are reasons that human tissue is going to be found in a car or blood cells or whatever, but not much explanation for the camera bag, in my opinion. Now, there wasn't a puddle of blood. They only found traces, which makes their conclusion here, pretty intriguing to me. After a second coroner's inquest, Lindy Chamberlain was put on trial for the murder of her daughter Azaria, and Michael was charged as an accessory. Based on the evidence that they had and that I've talked about, this was their theory. They theorized that Lindy took Azaria to the car, sat in the front seat, and cut the baby's throat in the front seat of the car. Again, they are saying that she cut her throat in the front seat, but there wasn't a puddle of blood. There were just small traces, which is hard to believe. They believe that Lindy then put the baby in the camera case, that she went back to the campsite, staged her panic of hearing the baby cry out, went and screamed about the dingo taking the baby, and then when everybody went into a panic and hysteria hit the campsite, that's when she disposed of the body. So that's the prosecution's theory, and they felt like they had enough evidence to press charges on both Lindy and Michael for Azaria's death.
We have covered a lot of stuff on this show. That's probably one of the most horrific and graphic sentences I've ever heard. So our apologies if that was a little too much to hear, but that's kind of the facts of the case, so we're going to keep going. Lindy's defense team had a very simple story as far as what they were going to present. They had several witnesses from the campsite that said that there were dingoes around. Lindy actually said that she saw a dingo and felt like it was tracking her when she would carry the baby around, which, you know, if that is true, that has to be awful frightening, right?
Yeah, I think that's got to be just give you a super eerie feeling where you can't really get settled while you're in that area.
So Michael would say that he actually saw one when he was with the older children, and they were actually feeding it bread until Lindy stopped them. So a lady named Sally claimed that she had seen one hanging around the campsite as well. And actually, just a few weeks before this attack, a dingo had removed a 3-year-old girl from the back seat of a vehicle, which her parents witnessed and intervened. They also produced witnesses who said they heard the baby cry out once it was in bed. Now, given the prosecution's timeline and the fact that Lindy was with them when they heard this, that makes the prosecution's theory pretty impossible. Everyone at the camp that day is fully on Lindy's side. So the defense team also brought in experts to show that the blood pattern on the jumpsuit could have come from a dingo attacking the baby's throat. But regardless, Lindy Chamberlain was convicted of murder on October 29th of 1982 and sentenced to life in prison. Now, Michael was convicted of being an accessory after the fact and helping cover it up, and he was given an 18-month sentence that was suspended.
Their first appeal was to the federal court in April of 1983, and that was rejected. And the High Court of Australia refused their final attempt in February of 1984. So Lindy was going to be spending the rest of her life in jail, and based on the media's portrayal of her, again, there were people who thought that she deserved to be there. This really divided the country. Some media portrayed her as crazy. Others said that this was some kind of religious sacrifice, which doesn't make sense with their particular religion in any way. But then a freak occurrence changed the course of this entire story. There was a tourist visiting from England. His name was David Brett, and he decided to go climbing in Uluru in 1986. Again, a very dangerous area to climb, and he had a very unfortunate accident while he was climbing, and he fell to his death. Now, it was a very rugged and dangerous area, and it took crews 8 days to get out to where David fell and to find his body. By that point, wildlife had found his body, and began doing what nature does. They had taken his body apart a bit. So the rescue mission ended up being a recovery mission and trying to find all of his body parts. During that search for David Brett, they stumbled upon a dingo lair. When looking in that lair for the remains of David Brett, they discovered Azaria Chamberlain's bloodied matinee jacket. Now, this took place on February 2nd of 1986. Now, a matinee jacket's kind of the soft outer layer that Lindy was wearing, and it had been placed over her jumpsuit. And during trial, the prosecution actually kept pounding the idea that no dingo saliva was found on the jumpsuit. They're saying, if you're saying the dingo took the baby out of his jumpsuit, there would at least be some evidence of saliva, and there was none. Lindy's defense for that was that, of course, they had a hold of the matinee jacket, and that's what had happened. And there was no matinee jacket found, so the prosecution thought that she had made this up and was completely lying about it. But it was upon this discovery of that matinee jacket that Lindy Chamberlain was immediately released from jail after just 3 years. This happened on February 7th of 1986, just 5 days after that matinee jacket was discovered. It should be noted, though, I mentioned that they had a baby in 1982 earlier. She gave birth to their fourth child, Kalia, while she was in prison. Before we move on, John, I just want to talk about how quickly this happened. I feel like if this was in America and evidence came out that somebody was innocent of a crime, they're not getting out of jail in 5 days, are they?
No, I mean, we covered this in one of our previous cases, Ryan. I mean, it has to go before a judge, and the judge has to be the one to make that decision. And in our previous case, it took a while for that conviction to be overturned.
Yeah, that's nuts. So she got out of jail in 5 days, but it still took some time to overturn her conviction, right?
Yeah, it definitely took some time to get that conviction overturned. There was a fairly significant amount of evidence that was presented at the final hearing with the Supreme Court. So let's run through some of those. Of course, you already discussed the matinee jacket, so that was a major piece of evidence that they presented. So the blood supposedly found in the car that you described as having like fetal hemoglobin, it was proven to be most likely the sound deadening compound that was used in the manufacturing process of this car. That's like a pretty big difference, right? Like, I can't imagine that they're using insulation that has traces of blood in it. So is this compound really that closely to resemble blood? I mean, that makes no sense to me, but I'm also not a scientist, so
I know this is early 80s, and I know we didn't have real good DNA testing, but I feel like at that point we were still able to identify blood and blood type. So for them to confuse that with manufacturing spray, like, that just blows my mind. And the fact that an expert would get on the stand and say, yes, this is fetal hemoglobin, when it's not even blood of any kind, is blows my mind.
I mean, that's a very specific kind of blood. So, like I said, I mean, I don't know if this guy looked at this under the microscope, but I could imagine it's a lot different than insulation or whatever. But anyway, another piece was that the expert that testified that the tears on the jumpsuit could not have come from dingo teeth changed his mind. So, again, I mean, that's a huge piece that was played out in the previous case, and now he's changed his mind.
I don't – like, if science changes, right? So let's take the Stephen Avery, Teresa Halbach case, for example. If there's a test done on some of the bones found behind his house and he's found guilty based on that evidence, and then later science changes to where we can do a different test and we find out that it wasn't her bones – I understand that. Like, that's understandable. But for somebody to just say, yeah, I thought it was dingo teeth, but now I don't. Like, why do you testify to something that you're not sure about based on every resource that you have? That just seems super, I mean, not irresponsible.
Yeah. Or like in the previous piece of evidence, you know, if they found those bones and then later said, you know what, actually they're not bones. They are, in fact, drumsticks. I mean, I feel like that's kind of the same thing that happened here. I mean, I say that, and I know people are going to think I'm being lighthearted, but that's a huge difference. One is blood and one is not, and I don't know why an expert would have a hard time getting those two things confused. And if it sounds like I'm being hard on the guy, I am, because it sounds ridiculous.
Absolutely. So, he deserves it.
So there are even more reports of dingo attacks in those areas. So in September of 1988, Linda and Michael Chamberlain had their convictions overturned and were exonerated of the crime of killing their daughter. This incident, however, of course, left a very heavy toll on the two in their relationship, and they would ultimately divorce in 1991. It's really common for people who lose a child to have that strain their relationship so hard that they end up divorcing, but this is a much bigger deal than just the death of their daughter. I mean, they were convicted for it, and all evidence at this point is saying that they didn't do it, right? So There was another coroner's inquest in 1995 to find out exactly what happened. The country and the prosecution still didn't fully believe or buy into Lindy's innocence. So all of the previous evidence was reviewed again, because there was really no evidence or no new evidence at this point in this report. So the coroner would go on to say what, Jamie?
After examining all the evidence, I'm unable to be satisfied on the balance of probabilities that Azaria Chamberlain died at the hands of Alice Lynn Chamberlain. It automatically follows that I'm also unable to be satisfied on the balance of probabilities that Michael Lee Chamberlain had any involvement in the death. But then the coroner went on to say, I am also unable to be reasonably satisfied that Azaria Chamberlain died accidentally as a result of being taken by a dingo. So the inquest here done in 1995 was also inconclusive, and the determination was that this case is still open. So, I mean, they're saying, yes, we can't prove that anybody did this on purpose. There's also not sufficient evidence to say that a dingo did it. So we really don't know what happened to this baby. And then from that point, we kind of fast forward to 2012. As both Lindy and Michael continued to push for resolution to the case. They didn't like the unknown label or the open status of their daughter's case. They wanted this to be solved. They wanted to know exactly what happened. So then the coroner's name was Elizabeth Morris, and Elizabeth took into account the new statistics on dingo attacks that had happened in the area, and the fact that they did know that this kind of thing happened a lot more prevalently than they thought that it had back in the 1980s. So on June 12th of 2012, the Australian coroner made a final ruling that a dingo dog took baby Azaria Chamberlain from a campsite in 1980 and caused her death. Now, despite that determination, like I said earlier, many Australians still believe that the parents had a role in their daughter's death and were able to successfully get away with it. I spoke to some of our Australian listeners just to say, hey, I've heard this is divided. Is it really, or are there just some conspiracy theorists who still believe that the parents had a role in it? And what I've heard, if you ask 10 people, it's going to be split down the middle. So it still very much divides Australians, and it's not like they're arguing over it and fighting over it, but they really don't have an agreement or a consensus of what happened. Now, Michael Chamberlain passed away in 2017, but Lindy's still alive, as well as Azaria's four siblings, one of which came from Michael's second marriage after he and Lindy got divorced. Some other notable facts from this case. In August of 2005, a 25-year-old woman named Erin Horsberg claimed that she was Azaria Chamberlain. She was the right age. And much like we saw with Timothy Pitson a few months ago, for some reason, people feel like I don't know if they feel like they're going to get famous, get notoriety from this, but Erin was proven not to be Azaria, obviously. But as the body was never found, when she came forward, that did get some traction, much like it did with Timothy Pitson. That pretty much blew up the news around here for several days until they found out that it wasn't him. Now, this is an odd one, John, and I don't know what to make of this. Again, the theory of the prosecution was that Azaria was killed in the Tirana hatchback. And so they've got this car, and it's impounded for a long time, and they finally get it unimpounded when they get cleared of the murder. What do you do with a vehicle like that? Like, it's such a part of your family's tragic story that you were accused of killing your child in this car. Do you keep that around?
No, I mean, I think about, like, if one of our children, something happened to them, like, I don't think I could stay in the same house, right? So if the car is associated with her death, I think I get rid of it. I don't want this tragic memory around anymore. So
I guess there are options there. Like, you get rid of it or you keep it because you need it. Aiden Chamberlain found a third option, and that's to celebrate this vehicle by including it in your wedding ceremony. So in Aiden's wedding, his bride arrived to the ceremony in the car that was such a big part of this case. Now, again, it had been determined legally at this point that Azaria was not killed in that car. However, it had been seized by the police as essentially a murder scene. Like, if you have to keep it because you need a car, that's one thing. But to, I don't know, celebrate the vehicle in this way just strikes me as really weird. Does it you?
Yeah, it's certainly odd to me. I don't think I would ever – that thought would never even cross my mind. I mean, because, like I said, in my mind, I'm getting rid of everything associated with that part of my life because it's just too tragic and awful to look at it and be daily reminded of what happened.
There was a film called Evil Angels about this case that came out in 1988. Meryl Streep played the role of Lindy Chamberlain, telling the story of Azaria. Meryl Streep was actually nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress, and the film was nominated for several Golden Globes. Have you ever seen Evil Angels?
You know better to ask me questions like that. No, I never even really heard of this until this case.
I mean, it sounds like it was a big movie. I mean, and it came out in 1988. We had just said that Lindy was found guilty of this crime in 1982, and they weren't exonerated until 1988 in September of that year is when their convictions were overturned, although they were released in 1986. So, I mean, this movie came out right when kind of the conclusion of them being in prison came about. So it was still a really big story. It was probably a really popular movie. I was a small child.
I was four. So, yeah, we didn't have access to that kind of stuff in Tennessee.
You were four. I was six. You were probably a lot bigger than me.
Oh, that's a fat joke.
It's not. I was a small, wimpy kid. Now I'm a small, wimpy man.
Believe it or not, I was small until like my high school sophomore, junior year. But yeah. But anyway, we digress.
Beside the point, yeah. So here's the big question, John. I feel like all of Australia wants to know, which side are you on? Did Lindy Chamberlain have a role in her daughter's death? And I guess consequently, did her husband Michael have a role in covering it up? Or did a dingo eat or kill her baby?
So I'm probably going to straddle the fence here and say both are very possible.
You can't straddle the pick one.
No,
Australia needs you to pick one.
I'm not going to do that. I don't think that the prosecution story of how the murder played out was, you know, if they did have a role in it, I don't see it going down exactly like what they said. I mean, these folks don't seem, very rarely do people just intentionally murder their child. It usually happens in everyday events and something gets out of hand and it escalates to a point where somebody gets hurt. So, for instance, I could see, you know, this family's on a camping trip. It's hotter than crap outside. The baby's frustrated. It won't go to sleep or it won't stop crying. So Lindy gets frustrated and shakes the baby or, you know, somehow drops the baby and wants to cover it up and make it look like a murder. That seems a lot more likely to me than what they presented as far as her taking the child to the car and slitting the child's throat. Like, that doesn't seem like it's logical to me. Yeah, perhaps Lindy had a – I guess we'll never really know. But at the same time, we have other cases where dingoes have taken other children once out of a car, once on another camping trip. So, I mean, it's certainly possible that a dingo did. In fact, if you had to describe a dingo to something that Americans are familiar with, would you say these are the size of like a coyote or a wolf or –
In between. I think they're probably a little bigger than most coyotes. Coyotes are smaller, but a little bigger than that. Really an average-sized dog.
Yeah. I mean, we just don't hear about that kind of stuff in America. Like, we both lived in the middle of the woods, right? But we've never heard, oh, Timmy's son got snatched up by a coyote.
Yeah.
We don't hear that. So
small dogs get caught up by coyotes and other wildlife, but not kids.
Usually when they notice humans, they don't really get that close to us.
Yeah.
So it's hard. I mean, is a dingo that much different than one of those animals if they're in the same kind of bloodline? I don't know.
Yeah.
But obviously we have reports of dingoes interacting with humans in this way before, so it's plausible. I mean,
yeah, you raise a good point about her, like maybe there being an accidental death that was covered up. That's something that I hadn't put much thought into. I do not believe that Lindy purposefully took the baby's life, and that's kind of where I ended up. They never showed any motive, and I know you and I talk about that quite a bit. Like, we were told by one of our scientific experts that came on the show to ignore motive. I can't really do that. I feel like it's an important part. I don't know whether her motive, there was any motive for her to purposefully take the baby's life. All the religious elements the press tried to throw on that, those are pretty ridiculous. The evidentiary pieces that really turn it for me are a couple things. And one's really the witnesses at the campsite who say that they heard the baby crying while Lindsay was with them at the campsite before she ran off to check on it. Now, that completely messes up the prosecution's timeline because the baby should have already been dead by that point, according to their story. If there was an accident once she got there, that's something different. But I really think that the witnesses there heard the baby cry, and they know what happened. I know eyewitness testimony, again, is something that is often brought down. But if that many people around are saying the same thing, then I tend to believe them. And then, of course, it's the matinee jacket. I don't know that there's any way that in planning this out, Lindy and Michael could have planted that matinee jacket in a dingo lair that was obviously took rescue experts 8 days to get to. Like, there's no way that it could have gotten there unless a dingo took it in there, right? Now, it was partially buried. It wasn't like it was just sitting there pretty for people to find. Like, it had been in there for 6 years or so. So that piece of it kind of ties it up for me. And I guess there's certainly room for doubt that she could have had something to do with it. So people can make that argument if they want. I'm just not sure they have a lot of legs to stand on. I'm not sure the evidence that she did something really stands up, as most of it was backtracked during this hearing to overturn their conviction.
Random question. You may not know the answer to it, but were they sleeping? Like, was the baby in a pack and play inside of a tent, or was this?
Yeah, I put the term pack and play in here. That's what I relate to. I'm going to put my baby to sleep in. It wasn't a tent, but for all I know, the baby could have been sleeping on a sleeping bag in the tent. Like, it could have been laying essentially on the ground in the tent, or right, or in a small cradle that's a foot off the ground in the tent.
So I'm a country boy, and I go camping a lot, and I'm horrified of, like, snakes and stuff. So anytime I enter and exit a tent, I always close it up. I just wonder, like, for this tent, was it like an open air tent? You know, you see that camping sometimes. Was it a tent that the door was left open? I mean, I don't know. I just have a lot of questions that I don't know that we'll really ever get the answer to. Also, when you were talking about the, the people that were around Lindy at the time and were kind of collaborating with the story, kind of reminded me of the Topaz 7 case we did over in England, where these family friends were all together on this trip. So is it possible that they were so close that they would take up for Lindy? I mean, these are all questions that are just speculation, and I don't know. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate, I guess.
I see the correlation between those two cases a bit, but I feel like the timeline for Madeleine McCain was much different than the timeline here for Azaria Chamberlain, where there was much more room to play with and much more physical evidence and things like that against the McCain family. But yeah. But I certainly see the tie between these. They were all on a vacation or off with friends and that kind of thing.
If the testimony came back that it was blood in the car, I would have a much stronger opinion on this case. But when we find out that it was, in fact, basically insulation, you know, to deaden the sound of road noise, there's no blood in the car. I kind of agree with you that most signs point to this being a horrible accident involving a wild animal. It's brutal, and I just hate all this happened for this family.
And here's the thing, if that evidence never comes forward, if they tested originally and say this is insulation, and then that other expert says, yeah, those might be dingo teeth on the jumpsuit, then I don't think she ever even goes to trial. Like, that, those were two pivotal pieces of evidence, so I don't think she ever even goes to trial, and that the community of everyone around doesn't really get as invested in this case, because at this point it's a tragedy of this baby being killed by a dingo until it goes to trial. So I think if those two experts, and I'm using quote fingers, you can't see me, had gotten it right the first time, that we're not even having this conversation.
Yep. This was an interesting one. It's been one that's kind of been on our radar for a long time. So Todd, thank you so much for bringing this one up, and we hope we did it justice for you.
I got one more question for you.
All right.
I mean, we asked whether justice was served. Obviously, if they did this, justice was not served because they're out and free. Even if it was a dingo, is there any element of neglect here, depending on the status of the tent? I realize you want to know those details. What kind of tent was it? What kind of structure was the baby sleeping in? How far away was the mother and all those things? But is there any element of that here?
I mean, so again, we're country guys, right?
Yeah.
We take our kids, you know, on these ATVs in the mountains and stuff, or at least I do. So I'm thinking, like, if I walk my kids through the woods and they get out a little ahead of me and they get bit by a rattlesnake, is that neglect on my part? I don't think so. If it really is a daggone animal attack, then there's – no, I don't think there's any way that's considered neglect. I think it's just a horrible accident.
ATV city, boy. It's a four-wheeler. Come on, man.
Well, it's not – it is a four-wheeler in the fact that it has four wheels, but it has, like, six seats. It's really nice. It's not mine. I don't have that kind of stuff. But anyway.
I hear what you're saying. I had to throw it out there.
I mean, if they, like –
because she has been vilified, so is any of it justifiable, I guess, is my question.
I mean, if we can 100% say she did not murder her child, then she was unjustly convicted of a crime. So,
okay.
But I don't think we're there yet, right? I don't think any of us can say with 100% certainty this is what happened.
Now, our numbers have been really big in Australia in the last few months. Like, it's been growing. We've been climbing up their charts on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to find out in the next week whether they love or hate this episode.
Fair
depends
enough.
On what happens with those numbers. So,
hey, I would love to go visit Australia. So hopefully we haven't offended you too badly and you would welcome us to your fair country and we could have a live show and meet and greet. You know, I think that would be awesome.
It would.
So,
no, thanks for tuning in. And Todd, thanks for suggesting this episode. And I feel like some of our better cases have been Australian cases. And I feel like that means that they're interesting stories, not that Australia is a more violent place. That's not what I'm saying. I hope you don't hear that.
No, I don't think that's how we meant it at all. Hopefully it didn't sound like that. Guys, thank you so much. So before you go, though, I think, is it okay to talk about some of the news we have coming up?
Yeah, I think we need to. And I think waiting toward the end is good because the people who are still hanging on actually care about this.
Yeah, so Jamie and I have been spinning our wheels on some other things we could do. Now, True Crime Cast is not going anywhere. It is. We love doing this, and we would never want to stop doing this. I guess there's realistically a point in our lives where we say we're done, but that point is not on the horizon
for
me right now.
There's certainly no shortage of crime stories for us to cover, unfortunately.
Yeah. But we want to do more. So we are starting a new podcast called Bless Their Hearts. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, John, we spend a lot of time together and we talk about a lot of issues. We talk about a lot of life topics together. And I really enjoy doing that. And that's kind of how we started this podcast. We talked about crime stories together and said, hey, let's put a microphone in front of ourselves and record that. So I think we're going to do that with the other thing. So essentially our new podcast is going to be John and I talking about everything that's not related to crime. And we decided to call it Bless Their Hearts. We had a naming contest on Facebook, and once we saw it, we knew that had to be it. Who was the person that suggested that, John?
Yeah, our buddy Ty over on Facebook recommended that. And, you know, it's one of those things like Jamie had threw out, I don't know, maybe 100 different names, and they were all great, but they just didn't feel right. So I think we suggested putting it on Facebook, letting our listeners pick. And when we saw Bless Their Hearts, we were both like, yeah, that's it.
My daughter asked me what that meant. And in case you're wondering, Bless Your Heart is a very Southern thing to say to somebody who is very ignorant. And I feel like we are going to be discussing topics as experts that we have no business talking about as experts. So Bless Our Hearts is really what it should be.
Right.
But Bless Their Hearts is the...
It's like you talking to us. Bless Their Hearts.
Yeah, Bless Their Hearts.
It's a Southern way to be a jerk without sounding like a jerk, right? Like when you see somebody doing something stupid, you say, oh, bless their heart, which basically means, oh, they're so stupid. So, yeah. We're the stupid people.
We're really excited about that. I mean, we talk about outlines and things all the time. This is a fairly scripted show. That is not going to be. That is going to be us planning a topic. We are not going to share our ideas before we record, so you're going to get to hear those as we do from each other. We're really pumped to get that started.
We've actually talked about if something really cool or crazy happens in our personal lives, let's not talk about it until we have a microphone so that we can like hear that story in real time and react as if we were telling it for the first time. So I don't know. It may be interesting ground in our friendship.
Yeah,
right?
Basically, I mean, we have to stop being friends except for when we record.
Yeah, and depending on the day, we both might be okay with that. No, but I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be good. I hope that you guys check it out. And, of course, we would ask you to do the same thing for it as you do for True Crime Cast. Leave a rating and review. Those would be awesome. I would venture to say at some point we may have a Patreon for that as well, or maybe somehow connect it to True Crime Cast. We really haven't discussed that. In the meantime, check out Patreon for True Crime Cast. We still have coffee mugs available over there. We still have, of course, the basic $3 a month bonus episodes. So you get access to everyone we've ever done, which at this point is probably like, I don't know, is it
15 or so? Probably.
Yeah. So there's a lot of them over there, guys. Check those out. You can get autographs over on Patreon as well. So a lot of really cool stuff. We have almost 70 people who have signed up for that at this point. So please keep those coming. I guess the biggest way you can help the show at this point is a free. It only takes a minute. Leave a rating and review. We've kind of hit a slump, I guess, in how many of those we're getting. And so those help out tremendously.
I prefer to call it a plateau.
Yeah.
Because it was going really well for a while, and it's a bit leveled off. We'd like to see another hill coming.
Yeah, so those help out a lot. Also, you all requested T-shirts, and we have those available. Go to www.etsy.com. That is ETSY.com. Pick up your T-shirt. I'll be happy to mail it to you.
I'll whisper this so John can't hear it. If you're local, just send us a message, and we'll give it to you a little cheaper. And, you can just come get it.
I feel like kind of like a drug dealer. Like, I have those in the back of my Jeep at all times so that if somebody orders one, I just have to get in the back of my Jeep, find the size. So, yeah, if you're local, I'll do a meet and greet with you locally and give you a T-shirt.
I mean, for money. But
oh,
it,
yeah.
It will be less
than. You give me money, I give you a T-shirt.
Less than the Etsy price.
Yeah. So, guys, thank you all so much. Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media.